It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The children of military service members, they face unique challenges here in Wisconsin and beyond. And aside from stress over their parents' safety, the State Department of Public Instruction notes that the average military child, they'll go to 6 to 9 schools before they finish high school. We learn about their experiences and how educators aim to support them. Call in with your questions, your experiences at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Shelley Joan Weiss is Wisconsin Commissioner for Education of Military Children. Shelley, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate. I'm excited to be with you.
Good morning. And Becky Wally joins you, School Liaison Officer and Outreach Services Director for Child and Youth Services at Fort McCoy, the Army installation in West Central Wisconsin. Becky, welcome.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
And rounding us out is Eileen Huck, Senior Deputy Director of Government Relations at the National Military Family Association. Eileen, welcome to you.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here this morning.
Well, Eileen, let's start with you. What makes the experiences of military children different from other kids?
So, Kate, I think you really alluded to it in your introduction. Military kids move so much during the course of their parents' military service. The average military family might move every 2 to 3 years. That means new schools, new friends, new environment. It can be tough for military kids to make connections. They also often need to cope with the deployment of their service member parent. And I think it's important to keep in mind that even though the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan have wrapped up, service members are still deploying around the world all the time, and their families and their kids are having to cope with those long absences. So, you know, we know that military kids are resilient and they are thriving, but they do face a lot of challenges.
They must have those coping strategies as they get older and they live their life and they realize what their parents are doing in their professions.
Absolutely. And, you know, we see lots of military kids honoring their parents' service by many of them going into the military themselves.
Hmm.
And so it is something that, you know, is a source of pride among military kids and families. But I think, again, it's important to recognize the challenges that these kids often have to overcome.
Shelley, today, Purple Up Day across the nation and here in Wisconsin celebrating military children. How meaningful is this recognition to military children and families?
It's very important. I was one of those military children who then went into the military also. And it is very easy to become sort of a lost face in the crowd. And by purpling up, it shows children that we recognize who they are, that we see them, we hear them, we're there for them. And so it's a visible recognition and celebration of the service that they provide alongside their families.
Becky, putting a number to this, about 15,000 children of military families in Wisconsin, about 2,500 of those kids have parents who are active duty military, the rest parents in the National Guard and Reserve. What are the education options for military children in Wisconsin?
I feel like Wisconsin has a great variety of options for these families. There's public schools, private schools, online virtual schools, homeschools and choices. So I do feel like Wisconsin does a very good job of giving options for those families for when they do move here.
And so from your insight at Fort McCoy, what are some of the you know, the questions that people have as they move in, as these families move in, about where to send their kids for school and what it will be like to get them there?
Yes, always the biggest question is what school district and what school. I think because of Fort McCoy, we're located in the middle of two of the bigger school districts, and a lot of the families, which is probably kind of a challenge, is when they first get their orders, they don't know exactly where they're going to be living. So that kind of plays a challenge. So just giving those families the options and information about you know, all the school districts kind of like in the local area helps them. And I just tell them to kind of say it's based on what their family needs are and their students' needs and to look into those schools.
We're talking about the experiences of military children with Becky Wally there from Fort McCoy. We have Eileen Huck from the National Military Family Association and Shelley Joan Weiss from a state commission supporting military kids. You can join in with your questions, comments, what your experiences have been, 800-642-1234. Shelley, what support systems in place, you know, at schools in Wisconsin that are able to be offered to military children? What resources are there that are really working for these kids?
Sure. One of the things, and Becky alluded to it or talked about it, we are very fortunate in Wisconsin. Although we are considered one of the smaller military states, our school districts have really stepped up to support children with their all the different areas, physical, social, emotional, intellectual supports, to make them feel welcome and comfortable in whatever school setting they're in. And so many of our, first of all, our educators in general, but specifically our school counselors and the school social workers tend to work most closely with those students and their families to welcome them. Some districts are a little more assertive in that process. Two of our school districts that Becky alluded to, Toma and Sparta, are considered military impacted schools. So they have a variety of different kinds of supports because they have the largest number of students. And they may have after school clubs, they may have specific buddy up programs, that type of a thing. But there are schools all over the state of Wisconsin that have those.
What would be a buddy up program example? What would that be like?
Well, for example, if you, Kate, were a 12-year-old child moving into an area, and this is, you know, your first day or whatever, the school district may assign you or possibly would assign you another child or two or three children who may be very familiar. They may have gone through a similar transition experience, and they would help you kind of learn the ropes in the school. They'd be there to help you answer question child to child instead of adult to child, and they would help introduce you to other people in the district and invite you to different activities that they were involved in.
Even getting around the school and knowing where your locker is and how to unlock
yes.
it, those can all be little stresses that really, I would imagine, add up, Shelley.
Yes, they do. And one of the things, and Kate, I am so appreciative of this show, because one of the things we're working hard to do is we're working hard to increase awareness that we have children all over the state of Wisconsin. The highest concentrations of those military children are in the Fort McCoy, Volk Field area, and also in the Madison area because of the Department of Military Affairs being here. But they are all over the state. Pick a place, Sheboygan, of course, Milwaukee, a whole variety of places. So we are trying to increase awareness that you have children in your school who are the children of military members, and please be aware of the support they need.
Which brings me to, Eileen, how are the experiences of military kids in Wisconsin different from places where there is a robust population of military families? I mean, obviously, D.C., but like, you know, or maybe nearby Fort Bragg in Fayetteville, North Carolina, or Camp Lejeune, Jacksonville, North Carolina. What are some of the contrasts there?
So I think Shelley alluded to it that, you know, there are places where if you're near a large military installation, you're going to have other military kids in your classroom. Your teachers and your school administrators are going to be very aware of the rhythms of military life. They might know that a unit or a ship is deploying, and they'll adjust accordingly. But if you're the child of a National Guard or Reserve member, or your parent is attached to a smaller installation, you might very well be the only military kid in your classroom. And that can be a very isolating experience to feel that you're the only person or the only child that you know who is going through this experience of being a military child and having a deployed parent. And so it's so important, I think, especially in these locations that have smaller military populations, for teachers and school counselors and school administrators to be aware of the military kids in their classrooms and be sensitive to some of the challenges that they might be experiencing.
Hmm. On this Purple Up Day honoring military kids, we hear directly from three advocates. Eileen Huck there is with the National Military Family Association. We have Shelley Joan Weiss is Wisconsin Commissioner for Education of Military Children. And Becky Wally, School Liaison Officer at Fort McCoy. Join in the conversation, your questions, your thoughts at 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Children of military members often experience repeated moves and deployments by their parents. We learn how to support them and help ease the stress of these transitions, what is being done in Wisconsin schools. Call in with your questions. Share your experiences. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We have Fort McCoy's School Liaison Officer Becky Wally is here, Wisconsin's Commissioner for Education of Military Children Shelley Joan Weiss, and Eileen Huck, Senior Deputy Director of Government Relations at the National Military Family Association. Eileen, you mentioned the reassignments and moving every couple years. How does that lifestyle of a family affect the learning in schools?
That's a great question. You know, because education is so local, it can be challenging, as you can imagine, to have to pick up and move every 2 or 3 years and adjust to a new curriculum, new classroom standards, new expectations. We joke all the time that, you know, kids might miss out on learning fractions or cursive because you leave one location and it hasn't been covered yet, and you get to the next place and they've already mastered it. Yes. So it's something that teachers in particular really need to be aware of, the differing standards and expectations that the new kids in their classroom might be coming from.
Becky, what are common concerns for families whose children may have individualized education plans or IEPs?
I would say it's one of the biggest concerns is for those children to get the same type of services and the same programs. You kind of mentioned before, when they come from a bigger installation, they probably have bigger programs and more services. And then coming to Wisconsin, they may not have those same type of services. But with the Interstate Compact, it's part of it that the IEP for these schools to provide the same programs and services, they may not be exactly the same, but they do provide those services. So that's important. And to help some of those families to do that, sending those IEPs even before they get here to Wisconsin, to the school, so they can look at it and kind of see what they were getting at the previous school, and then how they can make that work in the school here when they get here is very important. So it is a challenge, but we try to work through it and try to help them the best that we can.
Communication, I imagine, Shelley, is huge, because teachers have to make sure that child isn't losing critical lesson material or not receiving a service in the way that they were receiving at their previous school. How do you make sure that you can shore up those gaps?
Well, Becky touched on some of it, is getting any information we can ahead of time. One of the things I think, again, I want to compliment all of the Wisconsin schools. We have been ahead of the power curve on in many areas. One of the people who is now our governor, Tony Evers, when he was state superintendent, he dedicated a great deal of energy in the entire department, which has continued through now Dr. Underley, to make sure that all transitioning kids have the teachers and the school counselors wrap their arms around them, learn as much as they can about those children as they enter the district so that they can, the teachers can help to bring the children close to the areas where the other students are. In some cases, those military students moving in may be ahead of the students that are in the class. But I think that they've worked very hard in Wisconsin to individualize as much as possible. So they're providing the students with the services and with the education that the student needs right now. And that benefits not just military children, but all children. So that's been a benefit of the focus on the military children who are transitioning. It sort of bubbles over and helps all children.
Talking about challenges and support for military children, Shelley Joan Weiss there from the State Commission Supporting Military Children. Becky Wally is here from Fort McCoy, and Eileen Huck from the National Military Family Association. Shelley, a follow-up question that we might not think about outside of the classroom, but if that child wants to join in the academic year, you know, the middle of the year, wants to play a sport, how does that happen?
You know, it's interesting that you'd ask that, Kate, because as children get older, the questions, of course, change. And being involved in co-curricular activities is probably the biggest question that I get. And one of the things that the compact requires by law, it's part of our law, is that all children have the opportunity to participate. That doesn't mean that they will be on a team or whatever, but they have the opportunity. Let me give you an example. Let's say that a school district holds tryouts for whatever the activity may be. It may be a drama activity. It may be a athletic activity. And they held their tryouts early in the spring. And now a family moves in August or September, and the activity hasn't started yet, but the team has been selected. The law requires that the child has an opportunity to try out for that performance, for that club, for that athletic activity. Again, it does not guarantee them. It levels the playing field. It doesn't advance them. And like I said, in many cases, that's a real benefit for the school district, particularly if the child has been a very skilled performer or a skilled athlete, this can be a real benefit. But it levels the playing field so that those children, even if they arrive late, they have an opportunity to try out for whatever the activity is. And again, like I said, that helps all children. It doesn't just help military children.
Becky, have you seen that law in action?
I would say I have not heard any complaints personally or any real experiences with that. So I would say we do a very good job of that.
I want to turn to you, Eileen, the Defense Department operating 160 schools for military children around the world. None, though, here in Wisconsin. How are these school experiences different from other schools?
So, yes, you're talking about schools operated by the Department of Defense Education Activity. Or DODEA. And they operate overseas to support families living on military installations in places like Germany and Japan, but also in some states, primarily in the southeastern United States. And they are very much like public schools, except that with the difference that their student body is almost exclusively military connected kids. And so they are very attuned to the unique needs of military connected kids. They are prepared to support kids as they transition in and out of their classrooms. And they are very intimately connected to the military bases and the locations that they're serving.
I would imagine, too, they have a really close connection to what is happening in that immediate vicinity, or that base, if you will, for, you know, the family, you know, so that they're really connected to the news and the changes, I would imagine.
That's absolutely correct. If a unit is deploying out of Fort Bragg, for example, that's Dodea School that is supporting Fort Bragg is definitely going to be aware of it.
Yes.
And be prepared to support those kids as they experience the deployment of their parent.
Elaine Huck there at the National Military Family Association. Shelley Joan Weiss, Wisconsin Commissioner for Education of Military Children. Becky Wally leads outreach services for kids at Fort McCoy. Call in your questions. Welcome 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Over 1.6 million military children nationwide face unique challenges due to their parents' service, and we learn how to support these kids here in Wisconsin and beyond. They typically experience multiple school transitions. Call in with questions, share stories, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Shelley Joan Weiss is Wisconsin Commissioner for Education of Military Children. We have Becky Wally here, School Liaison Officer at Fort McCoy, and Eileen Huck, Senior Deputy Director of Government Relations at the National Military Family Association. Let's hear from Bradley now in Whitewater with a question. Bradley, go ahead.
Yes, good morning. So I have two children in my family that have IEPs. They're actually my children. And their IEP is a really important tool. But I'm wondering if maybe the military kids maybe every military kid should have an IEP, not because of what deficiencies they have, but just to keep a better record of the education that they've had at different schools. It could follow them, so that the teachers absolutely know without a shadow of a doubt how the child has performed in those certain areas.
Bradley, thank you for that. Shelley, you first.
Okay, thank you, Bradley. I appreciate it. And thank you for your service and your children. I would say that all school districts across the country are getting better about this. Now that we have electronic records, a great deal of data is recorded on those students. One thing I wanted to mention, and you've given me the opportunity, Brad, is that since 2017-18, the Every Student Succeeds Act has asked a question when parents enroll or register their children on whether or not the children are connected to the military through their families. It's a voluntary question. No one is required to answer it, but having that little piece of information sometimes helps to better identify some of those children. But to your question directly, I think that school districts have done such a good job improving all the time on recording the strengths and areas of need for students in those electronic records that can be transmitted rapidly and that can be interpreted easily. So I think you are right on. We need to support every child in the best way we can. And the more we can wrap information around those children, particularly when they're moving frequently, the better off the children will be and the more they are likely to succeed, not just in school, but in life.
Becky, what comes up for you on having more detailed records?
I think Shelley hit it perfectly. Also, you know, families can hand carry any records with them until the school gets the official records. So I always, when I talk to new families, say how important that is, you know, even, you know, just test scores or the curriculum or, you know, maybe it is what extracurricular, co-curricular activities are in. And just making that connection with a school prior to them even coming, you know, to that new school, just to kind of give them, you know, a little background information about the family. I feel is important. I try to, if families contact me, make a schedule or try to tour the schools before they arrive, just to meet the principal and some teachers maybe, just so they kind of have that know before they get, because orientation open houses are really crazy and it's so many people, so they kind of get just them in a small setting.
What about hand carrying immunization records?
They absolutely can, yes. And then they can wait to get the official ones, you know, at a later date. That is absolutely fine.
Bradley, thank you for that call. Eileen, turning to you, our governor, Governor Tony Evers, declared this year the year of mental health, and acknowledging really big challenges there. What are the most common mental health challenges that military children experience?
Hey, thank you so much for that question, because it is such an important issue. You know, we know that children and youth across the country are struggling with mental health challenges. That's not something that's limited to the military community, but certainly the challenges associated with military life can exacerbate mental health struggles. My organization does an annual survey of military connected teens. And what we hear from the teens that respond to us is that often they're feeling isolated. They've had to move so often during the course of their service member parents' careers that it's been difficult to make connections with their teachers and with their peers. And that can lead them to struggle with things like anxiety and depression. And so, you know, again, this isn't something that's limited to the military community, but it's certainly something that we see within the military community, and it's a cause for concern.
Shelley, how are children affected in deployments?
Oh, that's a really interesting question. And one of the things I think it's important to remember is, no matter what, these are individuals, and every child responds in their own unique way. First of all, I think that children, no matter what age, they're very proud of their parents' service. That's part of their life every day, is that pride. I think that Eileen mentioned it. We know that children who are military children join the military at twice the rate of civilian children, but they're very proud. But along with that, I think there's a great deal of fear. And oftentimes, as the child gets older, that fear is greater because they understand it more. It's not just missing my mom or dad. It's, I know my mom or dad are going into a very dangerous situation, and they may not come back. So I think that stressor of, you know, of potentially seeing my parents harmed or killed becomes more and more real as the child gets older. One of the things the law also provides is that children get more time off if they need to adjust when family members are leaving or coming back from a military deployment. So that's helpful.
Becky, how can parents and caring people and allies in that child's life talk about that deployment and help prepare them?
Yeah, I guess just having the conversation. There are a lot of resources out there to help families, you know, to do those conversations. I know sometimes families probably don't want to talk about it, but I feel like it is very important to even let the schools know, the teacher know, because it may affect the child. It may be a very well-behaved child, and then all of a sudden they are seeing some behaviors and the teacher's not knowing why. But if the teacher would kind of know why, then they can, you know, address it and, you know, help them and, you know, prepare things and provide resources and things to lessen it, I think is very important.
And what is your advice when the deployed parent returns home and catching them up on the growth of that child, the academic changes of that child, any insights that you have there?
I would just say it takes time.
Uh-huh.
you know, t- talk with the schools, talk with the children. Just communication, I think, is very important. And I think, you know, time and adjustment.
I'm going to reintroduce all of you. Becky Wally there from Fort McCoy. We have Eileen Huck from the National Military Family Association and Shelley Joan Weiss from the State Commission Supporting Military Children. As we look more deeply at this work of supporting and lifting up military kids, especially in transitions, 800-642-1234 to join in. Eileen, one service that that aims to help military kids transition to new places is the Military Family Life Counselors. Is this program successful? Can you take us inside it?
Absolutely. It's a great program. These are counselors that are funded through the Department of Defense and are placed in locations across the country to support military kids and families as they go through transition. So you'll have these military family life counselors assigned to schools, assigned to military bases, any place where a family readiness center, any place where a military family, just in the course of their normal activities, might be able to interact with this person and have a sounding board, have somebody that they can talk to about some of the issues or challenges that they're experiencing. Mm-hmm. And so when you're able to have those individuals posted at schools with large numbers of military connected kids, they can really perform an invaluable service not only to support the kids, but also to, let teachers and other school counselors know, a picture of what military life is like if those teachers or administrators themselves aren't familiar with it.
Shelley, what about online learning and looking at these transitions when the child is doing their schooling online? What is the impact there?
Well, that has been a benefit to many children. One of the things that maybe was positive that came out of COVID is that everyone learned that online learning can be a very effective tool. Parents in the military, well, all parents have opportunities to enroll their children in online learning, but parents in the military have some special opportunities with virtual schools that are designed for military families. And some parents make that choice if they're moving frequently. The parent's assignment may require them to move more than even a normal military member, and they may enroll their children in an online education program so that the child, despite where they're living, can remain in that same program throughout their entire K-12 life cycle, basically. And that's been a benefit to some.
On this Purple Up Day that celebrates the kids of service members, we heard from Joe Rasmussen, the head of University Veteran Services at UW-Madison, emailed to say that their program serves over 1,500 self-identified military kids. And today, their program is hosting a military kid panel that's moderated by a staff member who grew up with a father in the Army and felt like their identity wasn't seen on campus when they were an undergraduate student. And they also mentioned in this email that the University Veteran Services has a pen pal program for current UW students who are military kids to write letters to other Wisconsin military children. Joe, thank you so much for bringing that to this discussion as we talk about this important issue of military kids. Bring your questions and experiences, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Wisconsin is home to thousands of children with parents who are military members. We have three advocates talking about how to support these kids. Join in with questions, 800-642-1234. Eileen Huck is here with the National Military Family Association. Shelley Joan Weiss is Wisconsin Commissioner for Education of Military Children. And Becky Wally is School Liaison Officer at Fort McCoy. I want to turn our attention to childcare, which is such a huge issue. How are military families typically handling the challenges around childcare? And Becky, at Fort McCoy, you first.
Yes, I guess we're fortunate here at Fort McCoy for military families because we do have a child development center, which is our 6 weeks, 5 years old daycare program. And then we do have a school age middle school teen program, which is kindergarten through 12th grade. But we only do have a very limited, we do have limited spaces. So there is a process to get children in, to get into daycare, but that daycare option is available for active duty military and then also DOD civilians who work here at Fort McCoy. But yes, it is a challenge because there's not a whole lot of options in the local community if, you know, we do not have space for them.
Shelley, from your vantage point on at the state level, what are your insights on childcare?
I think we're like every other place in the country. It is extremely challenging. Childcare is very limited. There are a limited number of workers. Childcare workers, of course, deserve to earn more pay that they often can't get. It is the same for all families. There may be individual organizations or businesses that may give preferential treatment to military members, but they do that on their own. It's not mandated. There's no laws that are involved with that. But it's extremely challenging. One of the most recent contacts I had was a family who was moving to Milwaukee and said, where do we start? Just where do we start from? And then I reach out to a lot of our partners to get that family at least information for a jumping off point. It's extremely challenging.
Eileen Huck, you know, shifts in military may be overnight. How is daycare handled? What do you see out there for 24-hour access, especially around bases?
Yeah, it's a huge issue, Kate, because as you say, military members don't often work typical 9-to-5 schedules. And so the hours of the daycare center or the child development center just may not work for them. And so they are forced to look elsewhere out in the community for care. And as both Becky and Shelley mentioned, sometimes that care can be extremely lacking. You know, my organization was really pleased yesterday when President Biden made an executive order addressing childcare and directed the Department of Defense, among other agencies, to look at ways to reduce the cost of childcare. That's a really important step to make childcare more affordable for families, but it doesn't directly address the issue of there just not being enough care providers out there and not being not being enough care providers to meet the needs of military members who often work really long, demanding, and unusual schedules.
Is the Defense Department grappling with enough spots, enough space for on-base childcare options?
Absolutely. There are child development centers at I would say virtually every military installation, but the demand for care is far greater than the supply. And so it's important to be creative and innovative and look outside the installation to solve the child care demand.
As we look at the challenges and support for military children, hearing from three voices, Eileen Huck from the National Military Family Association, we have Shelley Joan Weiss from the State Commission Supporting Military Children, and Becky Wally from Fort McCoy. Let's look at education credits, Eileen. The Defense Department allowing transferring unused post-9/11 education credits to spouses or children in certain cases. How often are children able to benefit from these credits?
The post 9/11 GI Bill is a hugely valuable benefit that, as you say, service members are able to transfer unused months of the post 9/11 GI Bill to their spouses or children. And it makes college or vocational training much more affordable and accessible to military families. It's a hugely valuable benefit that we encourage every military family to look into. Certainly those GI Bill benefits are there for the service member to use to assist in their transition out of the military and into civilian life. But if that's not something that the service member needs, those benefits are there to transfer to a spouse and or children. And they can visit the VA's website for a lot of detailed information about how to go about doing that.
Shelley, what is your take on education credits and that transition also between high school to college for military children?
First of all, I would agree with everything that that Eileen has said. And I think that oftentimes when children are ready to transition from high school to another educational experience, first of all, they have a lot of experience transitioning, so that transition may be easier. And typically, they'll have enough high school credits to move on to the next experience. The other thing is that military children, depending on their family's history of being in different places, may feel like they have a wider variety of schools to choose from when they go beyond high school, because they may have been in a variety of states where they've experienced different educational systems. So even though I may have had my experience in Alabama, I may have spent time at Fort McCoy and I know the UW system, and I decide that's where I want to come. But I would say just exactly what Eileen said. I also see more and more families doing just what you talked about, transferring their GI credits, or what they can of their GI credits, to their children so that they can continue with their education.
They might be more willing to spread their wings as they've lived in so many different places. Yes. I want to turn to you, Becky, in these final moments, perhaps allowing you to have the last word here. How can people outside the military better support these kids of service members in their own communities?
Oh, boy. I guess just probably learning who they are and if they need the resources or they have questions. You know, there are so many resources, not to brag, but school liaison officers, they can always reach out to me. They can reach out to Shelley. Military One Source has all awesome resources. There's programs, services, you know, just knowing where they are sometimes may be challenging, but we all work together to find and help those families.
Well, thank you for joining us, and happy Purple Up Day to all of you.
Thank you.
Shelley Joan Weiss, Wisconsin Commissioner for Education of Military Children, Becky Wally, School Liaison Officer at Fort McCoy, and Eileen Huck, Senior Deputy Director of Government Relations at the National Military Family Association. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.